You've been through pre-Cana. Maybe you've even said I do. And now what? Welcome to After Cana, a podcast for young couples looking to make it until death do they part. In each episode, we will share sage wisdom and practical advice from couples who have been married for 20 plus years. Today, we welcome Melissa and Colin Brady, who will be sharing everything from their love story to their family life. This episode will be broken into two parts, so stay tuned for part two, and let's dive right in. Thank you so much, Mr. and Mrs. Brady, for sitting down and speaking with us today. Today, I have the absolute privilege of sitting down with two of my favorite people, Colin and Melissa.
Great to be here.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting us. This is a good opportunity.
So let's start with the love story. How did it all begin? Where were we? What was going on?
What's going on?
Let's see. So this is probably 1992. I was going to art school, California Institute of the Arts.
I don't think you have to say the year, but...
Oh, okay. Let me back up. So
to age everybody.
Yeah.
So very much like a Romeo and Juliet, West Side Story
kind of. That's true.
Okay. We were very different in terms of our friends, our life ambitions, I suppose. I was very much an artist, wanting to live this life of being a famous artist and doing great things in the art world.
I think you spent a lot of time with your friends talking philosophy and all the different world religions and being raised a Catholic, but you were still exploring, I think.
Yeah.
And in my story, I was raised in a Protestant household, a very faithful Christian home, which was an awesome way to grow up. I had great friends all through high school. And then, like you said, in college, I went to a Bible college. So I started working at this coffee house in the same town where this infamous art school was and my little Bible college. And one of your roommates said, "Hey, I think some of the Christian girls work at this coffee house."
Yeah, I was.
So you came looking for love.
I was just starting to go to a Bible study, and I really fell in love with reading the Bible. And even though I was raised Catholic, it was kind of a Catholic light situation. We'd go to Mass on Sundays. We never really talked about theology. Mm-hmm. In those days, it was very much the kind of "I'm okay, you're okay" kind of Catholicism.
Right.
And I really was hungering for the richness, the depth, the deep theology and philosophy that the 2,000 years of the Catholic faith have. And so at that time was the first time I actually went to a Lutheran Bible study. So I have Luther to thank for ultimately.
No way!
Bringing me back to the Catholic faith. And we have a lot to learn from our Protestant brothers and sisters about reading the Bible. And
so I think then too, you were working on a children's book, right? I was studying children's literature. So he came into the coffee shop, his hair was long, he had this leather jacket on, ordered some coffee and would sit in the, at the little table and sketch in his notebook. And for some reason, this was before, animation became this big deal in the United States and the world. But somehow, I think the Holy Spirit gave him this word, animator. So I just kind of casually strolled past and said, "Oh, you must be an animator." And wow. I didn't even, I don't know how I got that.
Well, but I mean, also you were studying children's literature in your Bible college, right? You were studying communications.
You don't have to keep saying Bible college. We studied other things as well.
I love it.
Music.
Barn raising.
Homestead.
Witch burning.
Sewing buttons.
But so I was writing this children's story that I thought was very deep, and I've never finished the thing, and maybe never will. But I was very impressed you picked up on a lot of symbolism in the story.
Wow.
And the bottom line
of that story, the real theme in it is a kind of theme that I love is redemption, right? Mm. That everybody can be redeemed. Everybody is worth loving. Mm. And so the story was about two clouds in the sky, mm-hmm. joy and pride, and a whale in the ocean, right?
Yeah.
The largest whale in the largest sea.
Yep.
And he started quoting the story to me, and I just saw the story of forgiveness and redemption. And basically, the clouds end up making a storm, right?
That's right.
And they want to be very powerful. And the sharks had told them, you can, you know, kind of rumble together. And with this anger, you can make a storm. And they made such a storm that they killed the whale with the lightning bolt. But and with his last breath, he sucked the, and then they melted because they're clouds. So they rain down into the ocean, and he sucks them up and gives them life again as a cloud. So I was like, what? Who is this guy? The long eyelashes telling me the story about, like, with his last breath, he forgave.
Yeah, self-giving, right? Yeah, and so, yeah. So I've always was drawn towards those beautiful self-giving stories. Even as a kid, the one thing that stuck with me in my Catholic upbringing was the Eucharist. Wow. And so that was the one thing that always remained. And so immediately we hit it off. And I remember coming back home that night and said, I just met this amazing woman, Melissa. And they said, what does she look like? And I had no idea.
Wow. And
all I remembered was that she had these blue eyes.
Oh my goodness.
And so I thought, okay, I'm going to play it cool. And I'm going to wait till the next week. I'll wait till like a Thursday night. And then call her up and see what she's doing.
Well, you didn't have my number yet.
Oh, no. It's actually, yeah, you're right. Before that, it was like, I still thought, well, you know, this was kind of like a little oasis of sorts. Because I was kind of getting tired of the art school scene, and I think I was really drawn towards, you know, a good, centered, grounded Christian girl. Mm. And so I came back the next week, and I kind of showed up, and I went up to the counter, and there was someone who was working there, and they knew already that I was kind of
I might have mentioned you to the other.
So I showed up and I said, hi, is Melissa here? And then the guy said, Melissa, and he just went away.
The whole coffee shop heard.
That's amazing.
And then all of a sudden she comes up behind the counter and she's playing it like too cool. She goes, can I help you? And I'm like, I'll have a cappuccino. And this is before Starbucks. I mean, this was still kind of
well. Starbucks was
it existed, but it wasn't in the city yet. And so, but that night we kind of got along, and I said, well, let's. What are you doing after work? And so I went out our first
day. I mean, I asked you out. I said, well, we're all going out to In-N-Out. I mean, if you want to come. I mean, if you don't, it's fine, too.
That's right. So our first date was at In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
With a handful of your friends from work.
Yeah,
And that was just like kind of, I mean, it was really kind of a love at first sight. I mean, mm-hmm. right from then, mm-hmm. I knew I liked the sound of her voice. And
thank you.
But also the fact that she had this very humble background. Her parents were these Bible-believing Christians going mm-hmm. to, I think the first time I ever heard the term, it was like, what, Sunday and Wednesday Baptists or something? It was like a Christian church. Like, it was like, Sunday wasn't enough. Mm. You also went to church on Wednesday.
Wow.
And I was like, that's kind of weird. What's that all about? But then I met your parents, and we started dating, and I remember her parents were very simple but wholesome people. Father was a carpenter. Mm-hmm. And they lived in this very small house. But even though they were very poor, I thought at the time they lived like royalty because they had Jesus. Mm. And so I was like,
this is... They always lived with such a sense of order and generosity, I think. My dad and my mom, too, are the kind of people, like, if you need it and they have it, it's yours.
Yeah, and so even though I would call myself Catholic, I very rarely go to Mass. I didn't know any Catholics that were like vibrant about their faith.
Right.
I knew our faith had something interesting, and we had, you know, these great artists.
It's kind of funny. You were at art school trying to be like super open-minded and researching world religions and whatnot, but you really deep down wanted this sort of like traditional, faithful person to complement you're exploring. And then in my circles of friends, they were maybe more conservative, and you were like this wild art school guy.
Yeah, right.
But our first conversation about that book and that story was about redemption and generosity. And So,
like universal love.
Yeah, universal love, like self-gift, right?
True.
And her parents were certainly an example of that. They were very supportive. They were supportive of us going to any church that was just regular.
Wow.
I don't think they were.
And we went to all the different churches.
We went to all 30,000 denominations. It was actually, I remember meeting your parents maybe for the first time. We were going to Hollywood Presbyterian.
Yeah.
And it was after a Sunday service, and we said, let's go somewhere to eat.
From Hollywood Pres, we walked to a Denny's right there.
And it was like in the middle of, like, you know, I mean, in those days too, it was just like even more kind of homeless people and
I don't know, drug addicts. I don't remember it being that bad, but we were already falling in love. So like all we could see were like everything through these rose colored glasses, like, oh, this is
well,
wonderful.
So here we are at Denny's, and right before we eat, her father says, let's say a prayer.
Mm.
And he prays, and it was, you know, not a fast prayer.
And it was like the most natural thing in the world, though, for me. And Colin's like, what is going on?
I'm like, we're praying in the middle of Denny's in the middle of Hollywood right now. And it was so strange, but it was also really beautiful.
Mm.
And I thought, these are people living their faith, like, right in the middle of the world. I felt it was something, you know, like from the movie Witness or something. It was just like this Amish juxtaposition of, like, what are we?
That bad.
And, but I think I fell in love with that idea.
Yeah.
And so.
And also, when I met your parents back in Chicago at that point, they're gregarious and friendly and open, and they hug each other, and your sister and your brother, you had this banter with them. So my experience going to your family was like, wow, these people know how to have fun, wow. And these people are warm and just full of love and interested to hear what was going on in our lives. So it's like both of the families were just open and receptive to our finding each other.
But I think it was a couple things too. Like, you were very comfortable driving. You were fearless and driving around LA.
Yeah, I've broken down in a lot of different places.
But also you had this babysitting job, and I remember you were babysitting this girl, and you stopped on the sidewalk, and the girl had noticed her shadow, and then you stopped and noticed your shadow, and then you were just started playing with your shadows. And I just thought, that's awesome. She's playing with her shadow. Like, it's like the fact that she could be completely content with something that didn't cost any money. Maybe I was a cheapskate. And I'm like, hey, this is a cheap date. And so the fact
that guy in art school, that was a hopeful sign.
Well, she was happy with simplicity.
Wow.
And you could be completely happy. You were already a joyful person before we met.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, she's not needy. She's just happy and content and joyful. And and then there was another moment too when we went out to lunch at Subway. And we were just having a lunch. And I think an old girlfriend may have been walking in the Subway, and I smiled or said hi or something like that, and I think that kind of it didn't sit well with you. And so as we were sitting,
it's not that at all. What happened was, I was in the middle of a story, or we were talking like this in-depth conversation, and all of a sudden you were not hearing me at all. You were distracted.
Distracted.
She hadn't even come and said hi yet. And I had said something like, did you hear that? Or are you listening? And then I noticed what you were staring at, and you still didn't respond. So
you reached over in the middle of our lunch. So you reached over, grabbed my sandwich, and you grabbed it, squeezed it, and you ripped it apart and put it back on my plate.
You're saying that with like two hands. It was like the end of your sandwich. And I was just like so upset that you weren't paying attention to me.
You destroyed my sandwich.
Mm. And still, I still don't like Subway sandwiches.
So anyway, but at that moment, I think that was the moment that I fell in love with her. Because it was so
odd. You knew you needed somebody to rein you in, like, excuse me, eyes over here, buddy.
It was the most unexpected reaction, but it was also, you were tough. And so I think also, I knew that whatever the future was, mm-hmm. it was going to be one that required toughness.
Mm.
And it's someone who is strong, someone who, whether I was rich or poor, or we had hardship, or whatever storm was coming our way, I wanted this kind of frontier woman who was able to like drive into the storm with me. And I think that's kind of what struck me at that moment of like, okay, this is a tough woman who's not this little flower that needs to be pampered or someone who didn't need extra care. You weren't high maintenance,
I suppose.
And so, yeah, so then I think after that, you know, I started achieving some success in my career.
I want to say what I was first drawn to in you, though, which was kind of this idea of the sense of wonder. Like anybody who knows you knows that you are a fun guy. You're full of ideas. You bounce from one idea to the other. You're laughing. You have this wacky sense of humor. And I was really drawn to that because I think I could even back then get too far into like worrying about, well, what if we can't find an apartment when we get married, or what if, you know, something bad happens or whatever. And you just have this joy in life. But more than that, I think it's this sense of wonder. Like when we would go on a hike or a walk and we would just like stop and observe things together, like God's hand in creation. We loved animals and things of nature and music. So I think that life with you is always like expanding my way of thinking. So that was just really, you were just really fun.
Yeah, I'm pretty childlike.
Handsome. Yes. Like, this is good and bad.
Yeah.
Mostly good.
I'm kind of wacky and playful. But I think, you know, even back then, too, one of our dates, it was this one date where I was going to wait a week until asking you out for a date. I was going to wait till Thursday. And you called me on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And you said, hey, what you doing? I remember it almost exactly that was your voice. And it was very playful. And I just thought, oh, I loved it. Listen, I just love the sound of her voice. And you said, hey, our friends are going to the beach. You want to come with us? And I said, sure. So your friends came by, they drove, and we just started talking. We got in this awesome conversation. Next thing we knew, instead of arriving at the ocean, it was like 10:30 at night, and we're in Gorman. We're in the Grapevine. We're in the middle of nowhere.
We took the 5 freeway, which goes all the way up and down California, just like, and they were just headed north instead of west. We did not even realize until we were an hour and a half out of our way.
Oh my gosh.
That's how we were, and we're like, engrossed in this conversation.
We're
in
like,
the
well, we're already like an hour and a half on our way to San Francisco. So I think I joked, hey, let's just go to San Francisco for the night. Let's just pull an all-nighter. Let's drive to San Francisco. And I remember you saying, yeah, let's do it. And not that we really were going to, but the fact that you were open to doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And we didn't know each other that well. And we were with a group of people. And so it just felt like, wow, here's someone that's open to adventure. And also at the time.
And a little pushy because I had called you first before you called me back.
Well, yeah. And also at the time, I didn't have any money. Like, I literally was driving a car that cost $100.
Yeah.
And it was just a broken down car. It's a car I drove out from Chicago, and it just barely made it. And so it's like, I didn't have the nice car, and I, you know, but we had hopes and dreams, and I think we had this love of the Bible. We had this love of our faith, and we knew that that was kind of the right direction.
Yeah,
we had no idea what the future was going to
be. I've seen God's hand in everything, I think.
Yeah, and so then over the next 2 years, I got this awesome opportunity up in the San Francisco area.
And I finished college and graduated, and by the time you moved up there, I was graduating.
There was just a moment where I just realized I wasn't looking around for any other woman.
Right.
And, well, there was also a moment, too, where you had gotten a speeding ticket or a parking ticket. I think it was a speeding ticket. And you were embarrassed to tell me about it. And, you couldn't pay it. I mean, we were both just broke. You were living in a, renting a room up north of San Francisco, and I had an apartment. And so all of a sudden that ticket turned into like a $550 ticket, which when you're broke is like, might as well be $10,000. And so I remember you saying, oh, I got this ticket and I can't pay it. And I just immediately thought, well, wait a second. Well, that's my ticket too. Mm. Like immediately your ticket was my ticket. And it was just a switch that turned in my brain instantly. And so, and I had a little bit of money. And so it was a
no-brainer.
You were
24 brainer. Years old at that point. We married.
Yeah, 24.
Yeah.
And
24
so,
and I was 23.
So it was very natural for me. It wasn't even a thought of like, I'm generous. I mean, even now, so we have 7 kids.
You are very generous, which
but
is
it's,
amazing.
But it's not, I don't even think of it as a virtue because I just think of it, and I'm not saying this to be humble, but I just feel like whatever I have is for anybody who needs it. And it's not, I actually don't think of it as a virtue because I don't think it's anything I...
Sort of just a natural, what's that, charism that God gave you. Not everybody has it, but you have it and you didn't have to work at it. It's just sort of...
Right, exactly. I didn't have to work at it and it's not
God
anything
gave you early
to
on.
Be proud of or it's something to be thankful for. But it's, but it was just a moment that I realized, oh, okay, yeah. We're in it together. Like at that moment, we're like, well, then we're kind of like, why wait any longer?
Right.
And so I always thought the ideal age to get married was like 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, I think, got married when he was 30. I thought there's no reason to get married younger. We didn't know anyone our age that was really getting married. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of your classmates from your Bible college.
Stop.
And but no one in my circle of friends. In fact, it was kind of like, what are you doing? Like, ooh, why get married?
Right.
It's ridiculous. And so for me, it was just kind of like, it just represented freedom of not being in the scene.
Dating scene.
And like being, just chasing, like it almost felt like, now we can get started on the important things, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to be distracted, barely
so,
going to.
So we got married in a Catholic church. I wasn't Catholic yet.
But at that time, the pre-Cana, I think was a very good first step of meeting someone who, very, like an older couple.
Yeah.
And they were very devout and teaching us about how we're going to raise our kids and this and that. And at the time, I was more of like a Joseph Campbell kind of artist. I was really interested in the symbolism and the true mythology, I guess that was probably the way I would put it. I knew there was something so rich of the Catholic faith. I was just kind of very artistic in that kind of sense and kind of drawn towards forms of art that were also kind of challenging the Catholic faith. I think at the time I was interested in things that challenged the Catholic faith.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember asking this guy, so you guys have been married like 35 years, 40 years, and have you ever gotten into like a really big fight?
Mm.
And he and his wife just looked at each other, they started laughing. Like, you have no idea. And I was like, whoa, how is it that these people have been married for almost 40 years, but yet, like, they've had knockdown, drag out kind of fights that maybe they thought was the beginning of the end, or maybe they thought was like something you couldn't recover from.
Right.
But yet, here they were, a happy couple. Mm. And so that was kind of a first step of like, wow, they have something special that I really haven't seen in anyone else.
God bless them.
You know? And
well, what I was going to say is, I don't remember at that pre-Cana, I don't remember them talking about being open to life or natural family planning or anything like that.
Yeah.
Colin really was really, really passionate about this storytelling and the stories God wanted him to tell and through character and character development, all that. And so he really wasn't ready to have kids.
Well, I wanted to be a famous director. I wanted
to
have...
Yeah,
that's it. I wasn't even that virtuous, I don't think. I wanted to have $1 million in the bank, be a famous director, have a house that was paid off, and then, only then, was I ready to be open to having kids.
Mm.
So this
on your terms.
On my terms.
So...
And so for the first 4 years of our marriage... we weren't going to Mass on any regular basis. In fact, it was kind of a comedy. Anytime we would go to a Catholic Mass, everyone was 80 years old.
Mm.
And
it was our perception, but it seemed like everyone was older and there weren't a lot of kids around. But I think what we didn't realize then that we were married in the Catholic Church, so we received the sacrament and the graces that came from that sacrament. Those first years were the hardest. Because we weren't open to life. We were sort of like trying to make this marriage on our own terms, not not this idea of like love is a self gift. It's not like you can put into the marriage, but what can you get out of it for yourself, you know? So those were tumultuous times, I have to say.
Yeah, the hardest times of our marriage was before having kids. And if I had to say one uber story of my whole life, it's always running from God's plan and falling into some kind of sadness or hitting a wall.
Kind of like Jonah and the whale. I don't want to go there. I don't want to go there.
Every
then you get swallowed by a big whale.
Yeah, all the best decisions in my life, I've ran away from. Until I hit a roadblock, and then through some kind of event, suffering of some kind, I'm drawn back towards following God's plan, and then I'm like, oh, this is so much better. Why was I fighting this for so many years?
Right.
And that story happens. It's my whole life story, but it also seems to happen on a yearly basis, and probably, if I'm honest, probably it happens on an hourly basis.
moment by moment.
Right? It's a fractal-like story structure that seems to repeat again and again. And so
meanwhile, you were reading all kinds about math and science and philosophy and reading and growing in your own faith personally, I would say. And I was a young married woman, married to an artist, and I just started praying, God, you've got to send this guy some good friends, some guys who are married, some guys who are just generous and full of wonder, all of these things that I had seen in you in the beginning. But at this stage in your career, too, you were sort of like, oh, I've got to do all these great things.
Right. In fact, probably one of the struggles or one of the low points before we had kids, I remember going up to Wine Country and we came back and we were just arguing. And these were the days when cell phones just first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were lucky enough to have a cell phone, Ford one. I mean, they were just starting and people were still getting used to them. So we got in some big argument and get back home and we had one of those answering machines in those days.
We went up to Wine Country, so it was like an hour away from where we were living.
Yeah, in those days, answering machines had a little tape cassette, a little mini cassette. Could like record up like a half an hour of messages. And we get back home and I'm like, huh, someone left a really long message on our machine. And I play it. And it's our entire argument.
Oh my gosh.
All the way back from Napa. And I'm listening to, and at the time I remember thinking, while we were arguing, I'm obviously right. I'm so right, I can't even believe how right I am.
I'm gonna say it a lot of different ways, how right I am.
And I think I listened to 15 seconds of this recording and I'm like, I sound like such an idiot. And I'm like, I gotta erase this thing immediately. And so we just erased the whole thing. And I'm like, wow, what a great form of therapy, of marriage therapy, to be able to just look at yourself from the outside for a moment and to think, one, what you're arguing about is not really that important. And two, how stuck we are in our own perspective. And without any kind of other guidance, friendship, bigger perspective, we really are blind to our own point of view. And so somewhere around there, I finally did get this amazing directing opportunity. I'm directing a major feature film, and things are going well. And I said, well, I'm almost there, you know, I'm not quite ready to be open to children, but almost. And you said, well, you're doing really well. Like, I think things are going really well. And so, long story short, I said, well, I can't imagine. I was too timid to say, let's have a baby, but I'll say, I'm open to the idea of having a baby. Well, very quickly, you were pregnant, and more or less the week the baby was born, our first child was born, I got fired off this project. Life came crashing down.
It was a hard time because you started to be open to the idea of having a baby. So we tried to be open to the idea of it, and it was like 6-9 months later.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a minute, I thought this, you know, I was in control of when and how and you know,
I'm
how
the
many.
Storyteller.
Right.
Yeah, telling well, a story. And we lost our first baby.
It was a miscarriage.
Wow.
And then I was pregnant with our first child. that lived?
All of my worst fears came true. Wow. That I wanted security, I wanted fame, I wanted a house that was taken care of. I wanted all this security before the baby was born. Mm-hmm. Literally the week the baby was born, all this came crashing down.
Wow.
In the big picture, it took me about 10 years to realize this. Probably was one of the best things that ever happened to me.
Really?
Because at that moment I realized, wow, I'm putting all of my faith in my career and my work and my own effort. And
I think we're looking down at the face of this. I mean, our first baby was premature too, so this like tiny little baby that fit inside a Christmas stocking.
Yeah.
And we're like, we just go home now with this little life.
Oh, goodness.
And we're looking at this little female child, this little girl, and thinking, we have got to get it together. This is a soul right here, and she's in our hands.
Well, and right? And well, personally too, I remember seeing the ultrasound of this baby and seeing that it was a girl and being so shocked that we were having a girl. And I remember...
You were a little depressed there for a while.
Yeah, I think I was just numb. And I think which says a lot...
You were so worried.
It was just full of worry and thinking that, how does someone possibly raise a daughter in this world?
Wow.
Women are just nothing, or they're reduced to images on billboards.
Yeah.
Women are just objectified, and they just, they have such a tough battle ahead. And so...
Which is interesting, because ultimately you married a woman, right? You wanted somebody strong and somebody who would ground you. So part of you knew, like, the world needs women. They, you know, knit society together. They...
Well, literally, my first thought was, who is she going to marry?
Oh. I mean, the little baby, yeah, yeah.
And she wasn't even born yet.
He was in the hospital. I was bad. I was premature labor.
She was like a, and yeah, I mean, maybe 6 months. I remember drawing a picture of her in the womb, kind of looking like made the placenta into a moon.
Oh.
And so she's already being cared.
That's kind of weird.
She was kind of being cared for.
The artist's brain.
Yeah, and But then the moment she was born, even though my whole world just turned upside down, the moment she was born, I thought, I was at peace just seeing her, knowing, oh, of course she's going to be cared for. As long as I'm here, that she would never be thrown to the wolves. Mm-hmm. I just kept thinking of that analogy. If I wasn't here, she's going to be thrown to the wolves. But if I'm here, she'll always be protected. And so the reality of seeing her actually there, and then just snuggling with a baby is kind of a fun thing, you know. they sleep on you, and they're
fascinating.
This childlike wonder.
So fatherhood, I think, and motherhood was like our first taste of like, oh, this is what love really is. It's giving of yourself. Like all of a sudden, this little creature, you would die for this human being.
And it was just the mystery of where the baby comes from. And I just kept thinking, like, it's the first time in my life that I'm not in control. I kept thinking of, like, this analogy, I don't know if this even makes sense, but it was just like throwing a wrench into the universe. And it was just this first time that there was actually freedom in not being in control. And whatever came our way. And so...
So we're slow learners, apparently, because we had one daughter, another daughter...
Another daughter.
Up to six daughters. So
a big part of our growth was also the gift of his mother.
Mm-hmm.
We went to this priest and we said, okay.
Oh, let's start
attending mass again.
We were trying to baptize one of the kids.
Oh, that's right. And so, but the priest, to his credit, was like,
why do you want to baptize the baby? Are you Catholic or not?
Yeah, why not become Jehovah's Witness? Like he was kind of pushing us away.
Mm.
And in hindsight, that was the best thing for us. And I was like,
it was kind of tough love.
Like, it was tough love. And so after the end of that interrogation, he then said, let's say a prayer. And
he just entrusted us to Mary, which we thought was kind of odd. We didn't really know about devotion to Mary or how she was part of the picture.
I didn't grow up. Even though I was raised Catholic, we never prayed the rosary as a family.
But you know why I liked that priest too? Because he was saying, I mean, just honestly, we weren't practicing Catholics, right? So we didn't know about openness to life, and we didn't know the ins and out of all the different kinds of contraception we may or may not have been practicing at that time. And the priest said, Melissa, you need to stop contracepting, and I'm going to entrust you to Our Lady. And to me, that was just like an olive branch. Like, he was loving me in such a way, loving us in such a way that he didn't want, like, he was the first person in American culture that had told me, like, that life is beautiful and that life is a gift. And it sort of blew my mind.
I remember visiting her parents' country church in Northern California, and we were just visiting and attending their service, and afterwards we visited a little play area where all the little kids were, and there was this little child that didn't say anything, and I'm like, hi, and I always like kids. I always find kids very disarming. And this little girl kind of looked at me and looked at Melissa and then picked up a little plastic baby doll and motioned to put this baby doll.
I must have had a blouse on or something.
Like, but under
she
your blouse.
Put it underneath my blouse. Like,
and I freaked me out.
This is a weird
story. I'm like, I have to run away. I'm not open to having children.
Wow.
And this strange child just was pretending that you were having a baby. Or here you are, you're going to be pregnant. But so after meeting this priest, I remember walking out of the parking lot very clearly, and I'm thinking, well, that was weird.
Wow.
Like, no one ever, I never sat with somebody that prayed to Our Lady, to Jesus' mother, for her intercession. And that prayer has stuck with us, and I think had power.
And for sure, our mother, Mary, took us in her arms.
Wow.
and then all these years later, little by little, it wasn't overnight that we were like, okay, now we're open to life.
Mm-hmm.
Bam, well, we have seven kids.
So yeah, it's definitely a journey. It's not all of a sudden like, okay, we're in.
Right.
It was
sort
just like
God gives you the grace you need at the moment.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So once we started realizing that the Bible churches that we were hopping around to, I think there was a visiting pastor, and his own idea was that he wouldn't preach from this one part of the Bible because he didn't think it was part of the true Bible. And I thought, wait a minute.
How do we know what's part of the Bible and what's not?
What are you using as an authority to determine what's in the Bible or not?
Mm.
And I think it was that question that brought us to a parent-teacher night. It was after our second daughter was born, it happens with every daughter. About 6 months after the child was born, the time all we knew were daughters. But after about 6 months, it's inevitable. You start arguing a lot, and it takes a good friend to say, wait, when was the last time you guys went out on a date?
Mm.
And you're like, a date? What's that? you know, we're taking care of the baby the whole time. We can't leave the baby alone. The baby's crying. It's colicky. It's this or that. Or it's fussy. And it takes a good friend to say, the baby's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You guys need to get connected again as a married couple. And everything else will trickle down from there.
Did you hear the one about the... Well, the love of the spouses is the bread for the children, right?
That's right. You got to get that. Like, the best gift for the children is that you guys have unity, and they'll be fine. The kids will be fine, mac and cheese or whatever. But you guys have to be on the same page. And so we finally planned a date night. We're gonna get a babysitter. We're finally gonna do this thing, and we're gonna go out for a nice dinner. And before we went out to dinner, you said, let's stop by at this local Catholic school because they're having a parent-teacher night, and let's just kind of see what the vibe is at the school, because this is probably, if we truly are coming back to the Catholic faith, we're going to be attending.
I think I was in RCIA classes at that point.
He said, let's check this out. And so I thought, we're going to waste a date night on a parent-teacher conference.
I'm very practical.
For a school we're not even going to. And okay, fine. And so it was at that night, that's when I first met this friend who was very articulate. He was just about to have their fourth child.
Mm.
But I thought, this guy's got something special. He seems like he's knowledgeable. He's not nerdy. He seems like he's a tough, like, kind of football guy. But also, he was really passionate about the Catholic foundation of their school. And I went up of my way to introduce myself to him. He said, well, I'm going out, my wife's in the hospital right now having our fourth child as we speak.
Whoa.
I gotta run to the hospital. Let's get together in a couple of weeks. We got together. I fell in love with their beautiful, chaotic family.
Yeah.
It was crazy. They had a large dog. The baby was in the middle of the floor. The dog's walking over their baby.
He's drooling on the baby.
He grew his own beer. But I thought, wow, whatever is going on here is a beautiful thing. It was beautiful chaos.
I think what it was generosity, because they were always inviting us over and anyone over, and neighbors would come in. They had no qualms about how many people were coming or how long you were going to stay or whatever. They were
right.
Just
how much
so
food they had.
Generous.
There was always room for one more in their household.
And they did things very well with love. They cooked food so well. They just like fed everyone, and God did deliver those friends that I had been praying for you especially, and then for myself as well. But one of the friends we met when his wife was in labor with their fourth child, and we thought, this guy is crazy.
Right.
To have four kids, like, whoa, what is the story here? And he took you on a hike with a priest.
And
a bunch of other guys. And they hiked up to the top of the mountain, and this priest beat them all up to the top of the mountain and celebrated mass, like, on this huge kind of rock for an altar. And so basically God sent you very, very good friends. And
they all were good down-to-earth guys. They were just like guys that were all in different careers, successful, loved to, you know, bring a bottle of wine up to the top of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
One guy was a gourmet chef, and he was able to, like, make any kind of dish up there.
I like the story of how he reached in his backpack and pulled out a mango and, like, sliced it perfectly and, like, you know, kind of turn it inside out, and just like, well, I was like, what kind of hike did you go on? I want to go, that sounds nice.
I mean, I know, I literally remember saying something. I knew this guy was a chef, and he brought all his gourmet stuff, and we were making some chicken or something. I said, what? No mango chutney? And I barely even knew what that even is. He literally brings out a mango and starts slicing up a mango in, like, the proper way. And I'm like, I mean, we're up so high, you have to get your own water. Purify your own water from the lakes. And so I'm like, who are these people? But they all had like four or five kids, seven kids, eight kids. One guy had 11 kids. Whoa. And I'm like, this is just a crazy group of people. I've never met anybody that really had more than four kids.
Yeah.
And so, but it was very natural in the setting. And they all were just very normal. They weren't kind of like, welcome, brother, to our weird, strange group of people. They were just like ordinary dudes that just were down to earth. And I'm like, this is an amazing group of people. And they all knew their Catholic faith deeply. And they all were very pro-science and up to date on culture and technology and computers and everything. And so I felt like I've never met a group like this. And I've never met anyone who was so articulate about their faith. And so I thought, whatever's going on here, I want to hang out with these guys more and more and more. This is a clear upgrade from the people and the things that I was pursuing. And so little by little, now all of a sudden here we are literally 30 years later. We'll be married 30 years now.
Wow.
And it feels like we're just starting. It feels like we're beginning the next chapter. There's like this infinite kind of acceleration into, I guess, the next phase in the next couple of years, maybe grandkids.
I
can't wait.
I think what we learned from that group of guys, and then like the circle kept getting larger and larger, that yes, they were successful and they bring mangoes up to the hike and a bottle of wine, but also they're fathers of 4, 5, 6, 7, 11 kids. And like, there are good times and bad times.
Right.
And sometimes you're doing well in your job, and sometimes you're in between jobs, and and sometimes a kid gets sick, or your wife gets sick, or someone passes away. And it's still, they had this sort of deep joy and belief that we are children of God, that God loves us like crazy, that God will always forgive us, and that everyone is worthy. So it's just like, on the surface, it was like, wow, these guys are amazing. They like to hike, they like to make mango chutney. But like this deep generosity and trust in God, that God is always available to us 24/7.
Well, and also, rather than all just thinking of it in this existential way that I am the center of the universe, and the whole universe is my story, and I'm the protagonist of my story that I'm telling, to think of it as God as the protagonist, and he's pursuing us, and we're running away, we're pursuing our own thing, and he's relentless in these gifts of these little whispers on a daily basis that if we're open to, listening to, he's trying to give himself to us.
Thank you for joining us for part one of our interview with Colin and Melissa Brady. We hate to leave you on a cliffhanger, but stay tuned for part two. If you enjoyed listening, share it with a friend, subscribe or leave a review, or visit ferrisloveshrine.org. And stay tuned for the rest of this episode.